I call this conference committee meeting of the Elections Policy Bill, HF 4772, to order. Welcome, everybody. I apologize for the slightly delayed start time here. I think the Chair Carlson, would you like to make any opening remarks before we get going here?
The only thing that I would like.
Only thing I want to make sure that we do is move rapidly. And we have caucus that we need to get to in an hour. And, I think Chair Freiberg, you're going to be leading us as fast as possible here. And I want to see this bill made sure that this bill is in the shape that we can get it through both bodies. So happy to work on it with you and happy to be here with our colleagues from the House.
Thank you. So maybe just if we could just go around the table, just everyone want to say your name and title, just so we know who we're working with. I think we could do that to start with. Maybe we start with Senator Bolden.
Good morning, Senator Liz Bolden. I represent District 25, which is Rochester area. And I serve on the Elections Committee in the Senate.
Good morning, Bonnie Westland. I am Senator for Senate District 42, which is Plymouth, Medicine Lake, and a sliver of Maple Grove. And I am Vice Chair of Elections.
Hi, I'm Christy Blood. I am Senator Carlson's committee legislative assistant.
Andrew Erickson, Senate fiscal analyst.
Lexi Stengel, Senate counsel.
Beth Fraser, committee administrator for the Senate Elections Committee.
Jim Carlson, Senate District 52 in Burnsville, Eagan, Mendota Heights in Mendota. And I'm the chair of the Elections Committee in the Senate. And thank you all for being here.
Mike Freiberg, House Elections Chair.
Wilson Lee, House Committee Administrator.
Matt Gehring from House Research.
Representative Emma Greenman, I represent South Minneapolis in the Minnesota House and am Vice Chair of the Elections Committee.
Representative Bianca Vernig, 52B, Eagan, Mendota Heights, Mendota, and I serve on the Elections.
Thank you, everyone. So just by way of a walkthrough of what we'll do here today, we're going to have our nonpartisan staff do a walkthrough of the policy bill. You should have a chart that looks like this in your packets. It provides a summary of where you can find each provision in the side-by-side. And then, assuming there's time, we will move to adopt the language that's the same. Senator Carlson mentioned that the Senate DFL has their caucus meeting at 10 a.m., so we will need to be done by then. We'll then go into recess. I don't know whether or not we will meet again today, unfortunately, but we will try to give ample warning to make so that the public knows when we will be meeting again if that happens. So with that, I think we'll turn to the nonpartisan walkthrough of the policy bill. If nonpartisan staff, if you'd like to go to the front of the room. Thank you for helping us keep things on track here. So just whenever you're ready, please just begin with the walkthrough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll begin with the Senate-only provisions that start. Just to orient you, I suppose, before we begin, the table groups things together by subject instead of going entirely chronologically, so we'll talk through by line number. So on the first line number, there are two sections that are Senate only, Senate sections 3 and 91 that relate to local government using a .gov domain, and it requires all counties and cities that administer elections to transition to a .gov domain website and allows them to use voter accounts to make this transition. On line 2, it is a provision relating to school board vacancies, and these are similar provisions that have technical differences and provides that an appointment to fill a vacancy on a school board that occurs less than 2 years prior to the expiration of the term is valid for the remainder of the unexpired term and no special election is required. It further provides that a school board may, but isn't required to fill the vacancy that occurs less than 90 days prior to the expiration of the term. On line 3, There are two same provisions. It is House Section 2 and Senate Section 19. And this relates to the major party political status. And this modifies and corrects a typo error related to the standard for a political party seeking to be recognized as major political party status in Minnesota. On line 4, there are a series of same sections related to voter registration provisions. And these are House Sections 12, 13, 15, 16, and 66, and Senate Sections 20, 21, 23, 25, and 100. And again, they relate to laws governing voter registration. On line 5, House Sections 17 and 18, and Senate Sections 26 and 27 are provisions that are the same related to absentee voting. And I'll turn it over to Mr. Gearing for the next page.
And Mr. Chair, starting with line 6 on page 2 of the chart is a whole set of sections that relate to election administration. These are all identical sections between the House and the Senate. You can see the section number is listed on the chart, again, in row 6. Row 7 is a series of sections that relate to the Electoral Count Reform Act. These are also identical between both bodies. And then row 8 is a set of sections related to recount procedures and provisions. And again, between the House and the Senate, this set of sections is identical. On row 9, again, is a set of identical sections between the House and the Senate related to the timeline for providing notice to county auditors related to certain types of election notices. And then row 10 on this chart is the first place where there's some substantive differences between the House and the Senate. This is language related to the voter registration application content. These are sections that require space in the voter registration application to indicate a voter's physical description of their residence. And the substantive difference here is that the House provides further specificity about the description and that it needs to be sufficient to correctly identify the voter's actual precinct.
On line 11, there's a Senate-only provision relating to the public information voter lists, and this prohibits making the information from the voter lists available on the Internet or a database or from selling or providing access to the information on the lists, and enumerates certain exceptions from this prohibition.
Then in row 12, on the next page, is a House-only section. This is House Section 19. This is language that requires the county auditor or municipal clerk to establish a polling place for at least one day on a post-secondary institution campus at the request of the campus or its student government organization. And then row 13, there are some technical differences between the House and the Senate, but this is largely identical. The Senate just corrected a drafting error. This is language that relates to the standard for determining the number of ballots that must be counted in a polling place on election night. And then row 14 is language related to the convening of presidential electors after a presidential election. There is a substantive difference between these two sections. Both bodies require, they further designate the location for the meeting of presidential electors. The House includes language that provides for a contingency in the case that the state capitol is not a suitable place for the electors to meet.
On line 15, there are a series of Senate-only sections relating to presidential elector contests, and this establishes a separate process for recounts for presidential elector recounts. This is largely similar to the current process, except for it establishes an expedited process. On line 16, there are three Senate-only sections related to doxing for election officials and law enforcement officials, and the change here is that it expands the definition of personal information. On the top of page 4, on line 17, there's one Senate-only section, and that's section 18, that relates to the distribution of absentee ballot applications by committee and private organizations, and this requires mailing sent by committees or private organizations to include a statement that indicates that the mailing is not official communication by a unit of government. On line 18, there are a series of sections that are similar between the House and Senate, but there are substantive differences, and these relate to deep fakes in campaign advertisements. On the next line, line 19, there are Senate-only provisions, and this has to do with the notice that is provided to a person upon release from incarceration. And it repeals the current notice and replaces it not with the exact language that has to be provided with the person, but a list of the content that must be in the notice that is provided to that person. On line 20, there are similar sections between the House and Senate, but there are some substantive differences, and these have to do with the county sheriff and county attorney vacancies and when and how those vacancies are filled. On line 21, there are provisions that are substantively the same but structurally different related to the repeal of the Hennepin County Board of Commissioner vacancies. And then I'll turn it over to Mr. Gehring for the next portion.
And then, Mr. Chair, the next substantive section on this chart and in the side-by-side is the language that relates to the Minnesota Voting Rights Act. There's a whole list of sections. You see them here, and maybe in the interest of time, I won't go through every single row on the chart, but I'll just note that there are some substantive and technical kind of scattered differences throughout these sections. This is the portion of the bill that provides a cause of action for voter suppression or vote dilution in Minnesota elections, and there's procedures for how those challenges are brought, including providing a notice to political subdivisions that might be alleged to be in violation of this act, and standards for receiving relief from a court. So those sections are the next several pages of this chart. They all go together as part of the Minnesota Voting Rights Act that runs through page 8. And then starting on page 8, in the middle of that page, is the sections that relate to campaign finance, and the first section is the Senate-only section.
So that takes us to line 35 on page 8 of the chart, and there are several Senate-only sections here, but I'll note that many of these, or all of these provisions, are also being carried in House File 4411, which is, I believe, the House budget elections bill. And these sections all relate to reporting of expenditures to the Campaign Finance Board related to local campaigns. On line 36, there are several similar sections related to modifications to the electioneering communications, and they amend the standards governing electioneering communications to include digital advertisements. On line 37, there are similar provisions between the House and Senate related to lobbying and political subdivisions and amending provisions related to certain officials within a political subdivision. On line 38, there's a Senate-only provision that requires rounding to the nearest $5,000 instead of $9,000 on principal reports. On line 39, there are two Senate-only provisions that amend the board's authority to impose late filing fees. And on line 40, on page 9 of the chart, there are two provisions that touch the same issue but are substantively different, and these relate to state and local lobbying activity studies. They both require a study and recommendations related to the lobbying of state government officials and local government officials. The Senate also requires lobbying registration requirements related to certain local lobbying requirements are stayed until June 1st, 2025.
And then, Mr. Chair, the last set of sections in the chart here are sections that relate to the census and redistricting. Row 41, you'll see this identical sections between the House and the Senate. This is language that provides access to multi-unit housing facilities to workers of the United States Census. And this change is to allow them to have that access anytime decennial census activities are being conducted. The current law has a time limitation on the access, so this expands the times in which workers can go into buildings. And then Row 42 is a set of sections that relate to the way that persons who are incarcerated are allocated in the redistricting process back to their last known residential address when possible. And, Mr. Chair, that's the end of this chart and the end of our walkthrough, unless there are questions from members.
Thank you to nonpartisan staff. Do any members have any questions for our staff? Okay. I have one. Let's see, on page 4 of the chart, the language related to Hennepin County Board of Commissioner vacancies, it says the language is the same, but there's a note that says there are structural differences. I was just wondering if we were to adopt the same language today, if those structural differences would make that provision complicated or not to do?
Mr. Chair, no, you could adopt the, so the substance of that repealer is exactly the same. The difference is just in the way that the House and the Senate organize its bill, the two bills. And so we could take your direction to incorporate the substance of that change into the bill in whatever form.
Thank you. The plan for today was just to adopt the language that's the same. I can make a motion to adopt all the language that's, I just want to make sure I get the language of the motion correct for record keeping purposes. Is it sufficient just to make a motion to adopt the language from this spreadsheet that's the same into the conference report?
You could also, Mr. Chair, if you wanted to go through sort of row by row the things that are identified as the same and do them separately, it's
sure.
That's sort of your call. The only reason why I point that out is I know there are some places that are identical where there was a potential discussion of a additional correction that okay. would be incorporated, so we could
sure.
highlight those if you'd like.
Okay, so in my mind, this would include the lines in the spreadsheet numbered 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 20, yes. I'm being told there are places we might want to make additional changes. I'm not sure what that's in reference to. Mr. Gehring, do you?
Mr. Chair, sure. Ms. Dangle and I were told prior to the meeting that there are a couple of sections that are currently identical between the House and the Senate where there were additional suggestions from the Secretary of State's office to incorporate new language that isn't in either body.
Okay, could you?
So I could tell you what they are.
Sure, yeah. How about, yes, sorry. There's a lot of moving parts here that I haven't totally kept track of. So
so the first place where that difference exists, it's in the, it's row 5, the miscellaneous changes related to absentee voting, row 6, the election administration provisions. So there are two changes there. One is in, if you're looking at the actual side-by-side, it'll be on page R22, which is House Section 20 and Senate Section 28. There's a reference in the current law to school boards, and the intention would be to strike the reference to school boards and instead refer to school districts to be grammatically correct in that section of the statute. So again, that's on page of the side-by-side itself. That's page R22, House Section 20, Senate Section 28. That's House Line 23.1 and Senate Line 29.12.
Okay, yeah, that's I do recall this discussion now. So that this it is a technical change. It would just change the word board to district on House Line 23.1. I assume we'd be fine incorporating that change as part of our same adoption. Okay. It refers to the language refers to the governing body of a township, school board, hospital district, park district, and you don't really have a governing body of a school board. It's a governing body of a school district. So that's fine. Would you, Mr. Gehring or Ms. Stengel, would you like to?
And then, Mr. Chair, so then the next change that will be incorporated is also in that same row. And this is on page R24, House Sections 23 and Senate Section 30. This is related to the use of the Office of Enterprise Translations to provide translated absentee voting materials. And we're just sorting out, as we're talking here, the exact wording of the suggested change.
And I believe the language is on R24, House side, line, page 25, line 25, after association, insert, or is employed by the Office of Enterprise Translations established in 16B.373. So that sentence would then read, the Secretary of State or County Auditor must contract with a translator certified by the American Translators Association or who is employed by the Office of Enterprise Translation established in 16B.373.
Okay, yes, I recall that discussion as well. So yes, the motion then would incorporate that change as well. And this is just referring to an entity that was created a little more recently that the Secretary of State would like to be able to contract with. Okay. Sure.
So then, Mr. Chair, if you would like to adopt all the identical sections, you can just make the motion to adopt the sections by the rows that you just referred to with those changes, and then that will be sufficient to prepare the conference report.
Okay. So it's just those are the two changes. Okay. So then the motion would be to adopt the language in rows 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 21, and 41 with the two changes just identified by nonpartisan staff. Is there any discussion to the motion? Okay. Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the motion carries. So we've started the process of putting together a conference committee report. That's really all that I had planned for this portion of the hearing. Like I said, I don't know if we will come back or not today, but just to keep our options as open as possible, I think I'm going to move a recess rather than an adjournment. But if we do come back today, I'll make sure there's, half an hour notice or something for the public. Is there any questions? All right. Seeing none, then we are in recess.